AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
You're listening to Banter with the Boys, talking all things sports. From betting and brawls, Super Bowl to Stanley Cup Finals, get laced up. It's time for Banter with the Boys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Rinkside Chirps. I'm your host, Kevin. This week we've got Smelty back, but also the infamous Kyle has returned from the sickness. Kyle, how you doing, buddy?
Feeling way better. If you guys haven't been to Vegas before, you guys should check it out. It's a hell of a time there. I had a blast, but got sick, unfortunately, but very excited to be back on.
Was that your first time in Vegas?
It was my first time in Vegas, yes.
Oh, okay.
Funny fact, not a funny, it's kind of sad, actually. I haven't been on a plane in 9 years.
Oh.
I'm not a good flyer, so.
Uh-oh.
I had a couple drinks before at 6 in the morning. Our flight was at 6 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
So I got a couple drinks in me, and takeoff was way better, so.
Really?
Because I hate heights.
I don't like heights. I was on a plane to Vegas, actually, once, too. Lit up. Oh, you know what? That was after a night of partaking in extracurriculars, sure. And then got on the plane,
I'm not a good flyer, but yeah, with alcohol, fair. it's a lot better, that's
well,
for sure.
I know, we're happy to have you back.
Thank you.
We pulled it off somehow last week without you, but can't wait to hear your takes.
I got some good ones coming.
All right, so first game of the two-game week for the Wild was the home opener and season opener for the Wild. It was the Florida Panthers at home for Minnesota. Game ended up as a 2-0 shutout for the Wild. Philip Gustavsson, outstanding showing in game one. Kyle, what did you see?
I saw Gus Bus playing out of his mind. You know, 41 saves against a tough Florida Panther team. Cup contender team, by the way. He was very impressive. He looked very comfortable. Poised. He made some spectacular saves, I thought. In my opinion, I thought the Wild came up pretty flat season opener. It's game one, so I can expect that a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. Gus was ridiculous. I mean, they'd get an odd man rush. You're kind of expecting it, and Gus would just stonewall them. I mean, he played out of his mind. You're absolutely correct. I know, for me, one of the things I noticed against Florida was the play of Faber. I was curious to see if he would kind of show us what he showed us in the playoffs a little bit. And obviously, he was really green to the NHL in the playoffs. But we needed his help, and he still made a small difference in the playoffs. And now you're kind of, I guess what I'm saying is I was looking for him to repeat that and or take another step forward, which I think he has. The way he, as weird as this sounds, the way he controls his body on the ice and then uses his body to give him an advantage mixed with his speed and actually his puck handling skills. It reminds me a little bit of Kev's guy Dumba. I think Faber could maybe give us a little bit of an offensive jolt as well.
Yeah, 100%. He's, you know what, in the playoffs, I thought he was fantastic in the playoffs. He plug and play, like he's that good. Go for captain. From the first two games, especially against Florida, like his gap control is ridiculous. Like what I've noticed more is now that he's with Brodin. Let's just talk about before Faber. It was Dumba and Brodin. I think my biggest question was, why is Brodin, like, I want to see Brodin jump up in the play. a lot because he's probably one of the best skaters. Like, best, in my opinion, I put Brodin as probably one of the best defensive skaters. Just watch him skate. Like, he's so smooth.
And it's smooth and effortless. No, effortless. I get what you're saying.
No, yep. But what I'm saying is, my biggest question was, why didn't Brodin jump up in the play before? Because I think Dumba gets too excited. Sometimes he jumps up in the play, has pinches, gets too aggressive, and Brodin kind of stays back a little bit more. But now you put in Faber, his speed, his awareness. In my opinion, I think Faber and Brodin are the best defensive pairing in the NHL. That's my hot take.
That's my hot take.
This is game. I know it's game two, yeah. But watching.
This is game one.
No,
we're talking about game one.
Okay, but we're going to talk about two games right now. But Faber and Brodin, in my opinion, are one of the best, if not the best, defensive pairs in the NHL.
Damn.
And by the way,
keep an eye on for the season.
I think Brock Faber and Brodin are probably the best tandem in Minnesota Wild history.
Holy.
Write that down.
Wow. So. Best tandem in Minnesota Wild history. 100%.
Yes. Yes. It's not.
Do you remember Brent Burns and Nick Schultz at all?
Hardly. I mean, I remember Brent Burns and Nick Schultz.
Damn.
Nick Schultz was all right, but like he wasn't special. In my opinion, he was a bottom six guy. You know, he was good. He was okay when he needed to be good. He didn't stand out. What was his point? I don't even know his career stats. But. Faber, well, he scored. His wrist shot against Bobrovsky this game, it was a snipe. It was a snipe. And it was a wrist shot. It was a low, hard shot off the post. I honestly think Brock Faber and Brodin are the best tandem in Minnesota Wild history. We should be excited.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, and you can't deny Brock's offensive abilities. I mean, you saw it at the Minnesota, or wow, at the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He would do the same thing there. So lucky for us, Minnesota fans, we're used to seeing it. And now he's translating it to the NHL speed of the game.
And I didn't watch Gopher. I watched a lot of hockey because when we acquired Faber in the Kevin Fiala deal, I was watching, I got more interested in the Gophers because of Faber. And to be honest, I didn't know what we were getting. Like people were talking about, when we were about to trade Fiala, a lot of people had the Devils as the target and targeting one of their top forward prospects. I didn't think we would get a defensive prospect, but I think that's because they knew, Guerin knew that I think Dumba was going to be out the door in the next, season. So that's why I think they made the move for a really good prospect like Brock Faber.
One more little tidbit on Brock Faber, and then if you have anything to add on Brock, go ahead, Kev. Sorry, we're just kind of...
No, you're good.
I could talk about him.
Yeah, we're just steamrolling you here. But one other thing I just wanted to bring up about Brock Faber in that game one of 82, remember?
Game one of 82.
Folks.
Yep.
The time on ice.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who led our team on time on ice game one?
Was it Faber?
It was Faber.
Yeah. Dean trusts him, and that's huge.
That's huge, because Dean, I feel like, don't trust nobody.
No.
I saw Dean at the golf course this summer, actually. We played at, what is it called, the Royal, in Woodbury. That's kind of like the Wild's home course or whatever.
Yeah, very nice course.
And my buddy is like, dude, that's Dean. I was like, nah. And sure enough, it was Dean. So my buddy, I didn't know what to do, right? I was just kind of like watching him drive away in his nice Jeep or whatever. My buddy's like, yeah, go Wild, blah, blah, blah. And Dean's just like, whoa, yeah. not knowing who that is. But like, you don't trust nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting to see him trust Faber in game one right off the bat.
And I'm going to add one more thing. Marcus Johansson, that interference call, or that, I didn't think it should have been called, but it was when he got hurt. Guess who was the first one that went in? Brock Faber.
I had that in my notes.
Yeah.
I was actually impressed.
Guess who went right in?
Yeah, I was impressed to see Brock jump up in there and do that. You got to think, some of the younger guys that are new to the league, they might not want to jump in there. And I'm not quite sure who hit him and got him hurt or whatever, but I'm sure it wasn't just some little piddly dude on the ice. It's probably a beefier guy. Johansson's a big dude, and he got hurt. you don't want to see that happen, but I was impressed. I literally have it in my notes. Faber's first goal. I was sad to see Dumba go, but like to see Brock Faber jump up into his place and really kind of attest to that role that he had played. Then also he stepped up for Johansson in the third period, which I thought was a huge testament to him going forward.
And that just goes to show you, like you said in previous episode, like the leadership, you know, Foligno, you got Hartman, you got all these good veterans, and you know, the young players are, you know, they love to see that.
Absolutely. All right, so talking about game one still, somebody that I was super impressed with, number 14, Eriksson Ek. I think he gets a lot of credit, but also he gets a lot of crap for what he kind of goes through and what he deals with. But I was very impressed game one. Solid offensive stats. Talk about one thing for the game in general, though. The Minnesota Wild's faceoff percentage was garbage. Has been since we lost Mikko Koivu. Have not found that faceoff man, that number one center that we need. However, Eriksson Ek, first game, 52.9% faceoff win percentage. I'm not quite sure how that stacks up in the league, but I was pretty impressed to see that. Also, some other stats for game one. He had a goal and an assist. All in game one, a two-point game for game one of the season. I'm not too upset about that. Kyle, what do you guys say about Ek there, buddy?
Yeah, I think we all miss Eriksson Ek, especially in the playoffs last year. That really killed us. I mean, you just go through that Dallas, you know, they won every draw, and Eriksson Ek by far is our best guy. So, no, he looked fantastic yesterday. Didn't miss a beat. Same player. Feisty, gets in the dirty areas, and big body. I love the line that he's on with Boldy and Johansson. I think that line can do some damage, and that's probably right now, probably the best, in my opinion, the best line. Right,
really?
Now. Yeah.
Okay. 100%,
yeah.
I like it. What do you think about the other two guys in the line, real quick? What do you think about the other two, Boldy and Johansson? How do you think they handled first game one?
Game one, I thought they were the best line.
Sure.
Johansson and Boldy, they can dish the puck so well. Johansson's so... He's an underrated skater. People don't realize how fast he is coming into the zone. Oh, yeah. A lot of the times, the defense, the other teams are like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And he'll just like go right in, and you know, he not very underrated player. I just want him to stay healthy, because I think his whole career has been, you know, he gets hurt a little bit and has a setback, you know, but if he's ready, or if he's healthy, you know, he's not a bad player, and he's pretty solid, you know. So I like it. I like that line.
Who else do you like on the Wild so far this year's season there, Kyle? You had some pretty hot takes about one of the newest guys here that put on a couple of pounds in the offseason. Who do you got?
Marco Rossi stood out to me. He looked way more comfortable than he did, and I don't even know how many games he played last year, but it was probably like four or five. Obviously I didn't like this. He started on like the fourth line, I think, like last year, and with his skill set, in my opinion, he should have been at least in the third line minimum, or else just put him in Iowa and just have him, you know, just play that full season. And, you know, he had a really good year down there, and he looks way more comfortable. He's gained a few pounds. He's not getting knocked off the puck easily. He's going into the corners. He's coming up, you know, away with the puck. And that goal, too, that got waved off earlier. That's a skill play right there. He, like, held onto the puck, made a little move, held it, waited for Bobrovsky to move, you know, cross. And it was a beautiful goal. You know, that takes a lot of skill. The skill wasn't a question. It was always, you know, he just got knocked off the puck. And right now he looks damn good. And the Wild need that right now. They need that center. They needed him to be what he was drafted for.
What he should be, right?
What he should be, right. Yeah. So, but he looks damn good. And I'm very excited for this year to see what he has.
Yeah, you can tell he kind of calmed down a little bit. The game's maybe, lack of better term, slowing down a little bit for him. He's able to see the ice a little bit better. So I completely agree with you. I guess we'll see, you know, how he shapes up as we move along with the season. I did want to mention one thing about Marcus Foligno. there's a lot of Wild fans that actually hate Foligno. I don't know why. I think it's more or less the money he's getting paid. They're expecting him to put pucks in the net. Well, you know, a couple seasons ago, he was putting a lot of points on the board. Well, that's because he had to, right? We didn't really have nobody else yet. Like, Kirill was kind of just getting into the league, kind of just figuring it out. But we have other guys now surrounding him. Hartman, Kirill, Zuccarello. I mean, there's other guys that'll put the puck in the net. So now, I think you're starting to see him kind of fall into this role of more of the enforcer, which is what we need. And, you know, we brought on Patrick Maroon as well to kind of help out with that because Foligno can't do it all on his own. So one thing I did want to mention for game one is that Foligno had 7 hits. The next highest hit total on our team that game was 2. So Foligno's definitely bringing some of the pound, for lack of better terms.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I didn't like about Foligno's, there was one, you remember that penalty that, you know, we all know who Tkachuk is.
Right.
He's an antagonizer. Like, yeah. He gets under opponent's skin like crazy. But yeah, that penalty, even though it was kind of garbage, like, you still can't, like, people wanted a dive from Tkachuk, but, like, in my opinion, it was interference. Like, you can't do that anyway. So I just want him to calm down a little bit and not get a penalty, because that's what kind of, you know, with a team like Florida, they can put the puck in the net with their power play. I mean, they're stacked up front. So that's my only criticism about Foligno. I love him as a person. He's a very great leader. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, so I think to your point there, I love Foligno as well. I'm disappointed that he put himself in that position, right? Obviously, end of the game, you're fighting for your goaltender at that point, right? I don't know how many minutes were left in the game when he got that embellish or that interference or whatever they called it there. I agree with you, though. Definitely should have gotten an embellishment on Tkachuk's side of things. I'm disappointed that wasn't called. Obviously, everybody in the arena, obviously, you're at the Wild's home rink, so they're going to obviously cheer for the home team, but it was obvious that he barely got bumped or got kind of nudged a touch, and then he just dove, which disappointing, but also to your point, Tkachuk is that kind of player.
Yeah.
He's kind of a greasy, weird dude that just does what he can to help his team. And I don't fault him, but...
It was a dive, but, like, you still can't make that hit. I mean, it would be interference for me. Like, that you could have had it be an interference call, but... Either way, I kind of want him to stay out of the BS, especially with Tkachuk. I mean, we all know who he is, so.
Right.
Very scrappy dude.
All right, moving on to the second game of the Minnesota Wild season. It was Minnesota Wild at the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unfortunately, the Wild fell by 3 in a game 7-4. It clearly was the Austin Matthews show. We'll get into that for sure. Gustafson, a pretty decent game, but we'll talk about him in a little bit as well. Pretty overall, just an interesting back and forth ping pong match, Kyle. Right?
Yes.
What are your overall thoughts on that game? Obviously, good stuff to see, some bad stuff to see. I know you got some hot takes. Talk me through what you saw, quick.
Yeah, I thought there's actually quite a few. You know, there's a couple points that intrigued me in this game, but yeah, you know, Toronto is just so stacked up front. I mean, you put them on the power play. You know, they got Nylander, Tavares, Matthews. Why am I spacing out here? But who is he?
You got Domi.
No, not Domi, but like, anyways, they're just stacked up front. You put them on the power play, it's not even fair. Like, I don't really blame Gus on those power play goals. I mean, there's just not much you can do there.
It's almost automatic with their power play.
You mentioned that. Sniper with, you know, Matthews, he's got 6 goals in 2 games, like back-to-back hat tricks. It's unbelievable. But yeah, they're just stacked up front, and you know, it's hard to stop that. Matthews came out firing. What'd you see from Kirill? This game, Kevin?
Yeah, so obviously Matthews and Kirill are the kind of the number one and number one player for both teams there. One of the big things that I saw from Kaprizov that I'm getting just absolutely dumbfounded by is every time he's got a breakaway, he'll break into the zone and just stop before the circle and then wait for support. Last season, when Kaprizov was doing crazy numbers, he would take that in. He'd body the guy next to him, and he'd push to the net, go for a penalty, try to get somebody to take him out, whatever the case was. This happened 4 or 5 times over the first 2 games, and it's driving me crazy. I get you want to pull up and get help, but, dude, take it to the net. You're freaking Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah, that's an interesting take there. Yeah, there's a lot of times he did that. But, yeah, like, I wish... One-on-one, it's so hard to, you know, it's hard to not take the puck away from him because he's so good. I do wish he kind of held on to the puck and, like, just did his own thing a little bit. Like, maybe circle around the net, like, you know, he did.
Like we're used to seeing.
Yeah, we're used to seeing. But at the same time, I don't think I hate it as much as you do. I think there's a lot of times where he would just... he'd make the open pass. Like he passed it to Middleton, Goose, both by the way had really rough games, but they fanned on it. They didn't even get a shot off. It's not Kirill's. I don't blame Kirill for that. I thought he made the right play, but at the same time, yeah, I'd like to see him be more aggressive, take the puck in a little bit more, find, you know, make a wow play. Like, we used to see a little bit more, but...
Make a wild play, no pun intended.
Yeah,
right?
No pun intended there.
Boom, boom, boom.
Just came out like that.
But I get what you're saying about Kirill, and actually I didn't really notice that right away, but now that you mention it, I know what you're saying, and I'm curious if it's a more of maybe he's growing as an all-around player, you know, knowing that he can't do it by himself. Now, to your point, Kyle, like, yeah, he pulled up, passed it out, and now we fanned on the shot, or now we didn't get any shot on goal at all. So I get what you're saying. So I don't know. That'll be an interesting thing to look forward to in the next 3 games this week and kind of see if anything changes there or what. But for me, it's more, I don't know, it's more of a, maybe the growth of Kirill.
I could see that.
But at the same time, I don't really blame him for it. If anything, the one I blame is, you know, Middleton and Goose for not corralling the puck and getting a shot on that, because they were open passes,
sure,
for the most part. Sure. But yes, I want to see Kirill be more aggressive with the puck.
One thing I will say about Kirill these first 2 games is he's all over the ice, but in a good way. The dude is a puck magnet, whether he's got the puck on a stick or he's back checking. I don't know. Like, the dude is all over the ice. So I can appreciate that. It's not like Ovechkin, 5 years ago, where the team would enter like the Capitals defensive zone and Ovechkin would just come strolling in,
yeah,
late as hell. Like, at least Kirill's in it and he's trying to get the puck back. So it's good to see this early in the season.
Right.
I think to your point there, Smeltsy. So first game, Kaprizov had 4 shots on goal and an assist. Second game, the one we're talking about right now, he had an assist and 2 shots on goals. To your point about him being a puck magnet, I don't disagree with that at all. I'm happy to see him do that. I just wish we'd see, as stupid as it sounds, I'd love to see the Kaprizov laps around the zone. Just see him take a little bit more of that time to really kind of lock in and find the right pass to make versus these blind BSs through the slot and then he just get taken and thrown away.
Because when he would do his, I don't know, speed circles, we'll call him, last year. Because he's so fast.
He's quick.
He's so fast. And he would just, if you are a Wild fan, obviously, there's a good chance you are listening to this pod. But, you know, he would just spin around, 2-3 times before he'd make a play with the puck. Either then he'd shoot it out of nowhere, or he'd pass it to somebody. But you never knew when he would do it. So that, I actually liked it. It was so weird and maybe unorthodox, maybe a little bit. But you never knew what was going to happen. He was waiting for his teammates to move, which last year, unfortunately, we saw a little bit where they would just stand around because they didn't know what he was doing at first. And you've seen him kind of get used to it as the season progressed, but he's waiting for you guys to move, get open, you know, make a play.
Yeah.
I don't think he's, this is my opinion, but I don't think he's the fastest skater. He's more shifty than fast.
I'm not saying he's the fastest skater in the NHL.
No, but like, when you're one-on-one, there was a few times he did have momentum with the puck, but at the same time, he probably felt like, well, I probably can't, you know, I wish I could drive the net, but he's got me, you know, beat on this side. So I'm going to have to, I will pull up and find an open man, which he did. Great pass. But again, like, I wish he would be a little bit more aggressive, hold on to the puck a little bit more, because he can do that. He's that player that can dish it out. And he probably has the best shot too. So why not, you know, try to at least attempt a shot, because he can snipe from it from anywhere.
And his passing's elite.
Yeah.
We saw it last year. Obviously, the season just started, but his passing is elite. He's a playmaker as well.
Absolutely. I agree.
However, one thing that's not as elite would be the overall play of our first line through the first two games. And Kyle, I know that's got you a little worked up here. So what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, the first two games, man, they've been passengers, in my opinion. You just need way more from your first line. I think I've seen enough with Hartman on the first line. Give me Rossi right now on the first line. The
way after two games, you're still...
Even after two games. Give me Rossi any day of the week right now.
You wouldn't move Ek up to the first line?
Nope.
First, Rossi. Give him...
Just Rossi. Snap. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Rossi's ready. I think he should be able to... I think he deserves the chance to be on the first line. But as we know, Dean Evason, he doesn't like to change lines as much. You know, he kind of just sticks. We've seen it in playoffs. And he doesn't change. So I'm afraid of that. But I think Guerin this season was like, hey, we need to start playing our young guys. We need to, even Addison, like, leave him in there. But, like, don't send him back down. But I really want Dean Evason to just start looking at the play and, you know, move Rossi up right now. He deserves that spot.
So to your point about bringing Eriksson Ek up to the first line, I'm actually with Kyle on that. I think that Ek, as great as he is as a centerman, I think Rossi would be a better fit on that line. I feel like Rossi is a little bit more nimble, a little bit more greasy, if you will, with the puck. I feel like he's got a little bit more of a finesse to his game, a little bit more skill, versus where I love Eriksson Ek. I think he's more of the kind of old school Koivu where he's just a solid player. You know he's going to be there when you need him. Versus with Rossi, I think he might have a little bit more of that finesse that Zuccarello and Kaprizov might need. But the question is can he win enough draws to even make it worth his while? Because if you lose that draw, you're going to be in the defensive zone right off the jump, or you're going to be just trying to play catch the puck for the entire shift, and you burn your best guys out doing nothing.
Right now, I don't know what Hartman's faceoff percentage is off the top of my head, but I know he's not doing that great. And that's a stat where I think you can just get better overall as each year progresses. We've seen what Eriksson Ek can do. But yeah, I think Rossi fits the skill up, you know, fits the skill level with Kirill. It'd be exciting. It'd be really fun to watch. Why not just give it a chance? And honestly, you know, there's really nothing to lose for it.
Hartman's faceoff percentage right now is 40% through the first two games. And that's against, you know, top tier centers, most likely. And then you got Rossi sitting at 42.9% through the first two games, and that's going to be against lesser skilled centers.
Sure.
So I think to that point, it is kind of a wash right now. So why not? Yeah, why not bring him up there, check him out, see how he plays with Zuccarello and Kirill on the first line, which you have to think they've already been trying that in practice, trying different combinations through training camp. You would imagine, but, you know, who knows?
And this is not a knock on Ryan Hartman, but...
No.
He's not a one center. He's not a number one center. He's not even a number two center, in my opinion. He's a number three, number four guy, permanently, right now.
Do you think that Evason's putting him up right now, one, because of his ability to just be a leader on the line, or just the fact that he's making all this money right now?
Yeah, like...
Do you think that's part of it?
Like, Dean likes the veterans. Maybe. So he's going to lean towards what? Oh, well... Hartman was with Kirill last year, you know, why I'm not switching that up. But yeah, we're seeing it with Rossi's what he can do, and he looks like a damn good player, and I want to see it. So
do you think it's a little too early in the season to make that kind of a major shift?
No.
You think just say screw it and send it now? Yep.
No, now is when you make that type of change.
Really?
When you have more time to be like, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's go back to this, or let's try something different.
Sure.
Like, now is when you start trying to figure out what's going to work for later down the road. Yes, injuries could happen, and now you got to change shit up again, right? Okay, well, why not figure out who can play with each other now, so when an injury does inevitably happen, you know who can play with who at that point.
And to be honest, that third line, let's say Hartman does move down. Like, That line, that's a solid third line. Hartman, Foligno, and Gaudreau, that's a solid third line.
That's a great third line.
I love that third line. That so I really want Rossi number one, and I don't want to touch Eriksson Ek's line. I think they work just fine together. That first line needs more mojo.
That's fair. That's fair.
Not Marcus Johansson, just more.
We just need more from the first line. That's fair. I mean, you got anything else to add about our top line struggles at the moment?
Not about our top line struggles, but I do have something to take us into kind of our next topic here where I worry about the changing of lines. You guys mentioned that Dean Evason's not a big line change guy. Throughout the entire game yesterday, second and third period primarily, the assistant coach changed the defensive pairings all game long. We know for a fact that that game was a joke on our defensive pairings. 4 goals against for Middleton, 3 goals against for Goligoski, including 2 penalties that resulted in a Matthews or just a goal in general.
So are we all in agreement that maybe 1, maybe 2 goals are actually Gus's fault and the rest falls on our defensive play?
Yeah, I don't put Gus at fault at all that game. It was definitely our defense. And when you give the Maple Leafs a power play, they're probably going to score because with all that firepower, all that talent up front, it's just not fair.
And they were 2 for 3 on the power
play. Yeah, yep. So I thought they were going to go 3 for 3, to be honest.
Yep, but for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. So I agree. I mean, looking at the defensive play, I mean, obviously...
We're all just over here with just disgusted looks on our face.
Just brutal, man.
I keep replaying one play in my head, and it was Nylander flying down the side. Eriksson Ek perfectly back checks him, does everything right, but Goligoski and Middleton both allowed themselves to be washed out of the play by Tavares right in front of the net. I blame Goligoski a little more. You know, at least one of you should stay with Tavares in front of the net, right? At that play, it should have been Middleton. Goligoski, you need to get over there and help Ek. Ek's not your primary defensive player on that play. Get the hell over there. No, Nylander made a heck of a play, right, and scored. But come on, man. Like
It was literally just a walk-in.
There's nobody home.
Nobody home. Just a walk-in. Like, you can't allow that.
And I think I attribute some of that to just, again, you can't change your defensive pairings all game. And Russo even tweeted about it in the middle of the third or late in the second period that they just kept changing those pairings up. And don't get me wrong, I know that Spurgeon's hurt. You lost Dumba. You got Goligoski, who was on the freaking bench or in the, you know, the press box all last season for most of it. So you got guys in there who are relatively new to the system, new to the play style for the Wild's defensive pairings. I was just disappointed not to see just some consistency within those. If you guys that are playing like crap, sit them. Let the guys that are doing well play.
When Spurgeon is back, I think Goligoski's to the box.
Agreed.
It's not Addison. Addison's going to be in, but because he's our power play. He's like our, you know, point guy on the power play. Like Klingberg, he went to Toronto. So Addison's our... like top guy. I don't see him or sending him down as they shouldn't. They need to give Addison a real shot, not this, hey, you had a, you know, bad defensive play, but on the offensive side you did okay. We're gonna send you down to Iowa. They need to have Addison up here because they just need to see what they have in him. Like, this is his year. Like, Goligoski to the moon. And once Spurgeon is back, I've seen enough of Goligoski.
Because Addison's on a 1-year deal, right?
It's kind of like a 1-year proven deal.
Right. Yeah, right. They signed him, yeah.
Right, so this is kind of his time to shine, yes. Or like kind of prove it. So I agree 100% with you on Addison. What I need to personally see from Addison is calm the hell down. He's out there, he's rigid, if that makes sense. He's so rigid and like robotic, like, dude, calm down. You play like you're supposed to be there because you've earned that opportunity. And I think he's just still playing with way too many nerves right now. He just, every time he touches a puck, he's twitchy with it. Yeah. He doesn't know what to do with it. And I think that's just experience, right? So to your point, absolutely leave him up here. Leave him in the lineup. Get him more clock. He had the least amount of time on the ice last night for all of our defensive players, which just shows you Dean's not ready to play him, really. Which him and Dean got into it multiple times last season, so I just don't want that to happen
then,
again.
Yeah, and then you're sending Goligoski out there, like...
Now, do you think that Addison's timid play, I think timid play is probably a better way to put it. Do you think that is a direct result of those conversations, we'll call them, you know, kind of air quotes, with Dean Evason? Or do you think it's part of just him in fear of being sent back down again for a slappy like Goligoski?
If it is from because of the conversations with Dean, and maybe he's a little nervous of that, no offense, but it's time to grow the F up.
Yeah.
You know, you're a professional hockey player. You need to take that criticism and turn it into fuel. Now, if he's disrespecting him personally on a personal level, that's completely different. That's a problem. That's a locker room problem as well, if that's who your coach is. But if he's just, you know, pushing him to be better by being a little bit aggressive with it, I think that's okay. And I think it's time for Addison to take that step up. It could be worse somewhere else, you know? So if your plan is to like, oh, I'll just play somewhere else next year, how do you know it's going to be different?
He just needs a real shot. Like, give him the season right now and see if it works out or not. Because right now you got nothing to lose. Like, he's still a young, you know, player with a lot of upside. So
what are we paying him for this 1 year? Because Smeltz, you and I talked about this last episode, that he's in a 1 year prove it deal. How much is this tryout effectively costing the Wild right now? Because as we mentioned, we got no money to spend. And on a guy who's timid, possibly not getting a good shot, what's
probably $1 million, I think.
I think it's $1 million.
I think
bucks
it's like
for
a
that?
Million, yeah. I think it's right around a million. But either way, like, you just got to give him a chance.
825.
That is even better. I expect it to be more than that. So I'm not mad about that. I think 875 or 825?
825.
825 for a tryout for a year, not a bad deal.
No.
But to your point, Kyle, he's got to get a shot.
Yeah, he needs a shot.
But also to Smeltzy's point, he's got to do something with it. So I think it's going to be a true test over the next few weeks to see who sticks around. Because again, Spurgeon is week to week. We would expect him hopefully back, knock on wood, by maybe early November, a couple weeks coming up. That'll give him a month out in the quote-unquote week-to-week kind of timeline. Otherwise, he'd have been on long-term IR. It's a whole thing. Yeah. I think he'll probably be back in the next few weeks. Then again, to your point, I think Goligoski, back to the press box, put your suit on, hang out, bud. Addison gets to keep his chance, especially after the last game last night. Again, 3 goals against and 2 penalties that I believe at least one of those resulted in a power play or in a power play goal for Toronto. I think Goligoski's gone. Not gone, but like to the press box.
Yeah, he should. Addison, to me, like, yeah, he just needs a shot. Like, we saw it with Rossi even. Like, even the last, like 100%. Last year. Like, we were, I think all of us fans were so disappointed because there was just so much hype around Marco Rossi. And that, hey, that could, you know, that could take a toll on you. Like in your mind, like, the whole fan base is counting on you to be the number one center. I feel like it's kind of the same way with Addison a little bit.
Well, don't forget last year, too, the Wild's, like, media team did an entire video series on Addison and on Rossi when they got there, like, hey, you better find an apartment here. You're sticking it out. Like, congratulations. Or when Guerin made the joke to Addison, like, how does number two sound? Or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Or he's like, that sounds like an actual number because you're here to stay. And then, what, 4 or 6 weeks later, his ass was back in Iowa again,
yeah,
hanging out with the slappies down there. Like, I there's a lot of pressure on both of them.
Yep.
But I think Rossi, I think, is built different this season.
Oh,
and I think he's ready to play. And I think Addison needs to just buck up and to smount to your point, man up and just be there. You're there.
You know, the first game wasn't, I mean, he didn't look great, but I thought the second game it was a little bit better. To be honest, the second game was just a train wreck for a lot of our players. So, I mean, Toronto's a good team, don't get me wrong, but I still believe in Addison. I still think he'll be a good player, in my opinion. So
we'll see if he makes it past this season, right?
Yeah, I kind of hope
prove
so.
Prove a deal. One final thing that I want to talk about real fast here for the second game that I saw is Ryan Reeves made an appearance that was pretty easily felt across the entire Minnesota lineup. Obviously, Revo just left the Wild last season. I love to see him with the Wild, but also you hate to see him on the bench across from you or next to you, right? So, a couple of things there. First period, double hits. Same shift, he ran right through Rossi, right up against the boards, crunched him. Thankfully, Rossi got up, no problems. Second, right after, about 10 seconds later, he ran through 89, Freddie Gaudreau, and he went out for the rest of the first period. Did not look good. Right after the second hit, who did we talk about before? Marcus Foligno. He came in, took care of business, a little scrap for the ages there between the two of them. I just disappointed to see our guys getting crumbled like that. But with Reeves on the bench next to you, you kind of have to expect some rough stuff.
Yeah, you know it's going to happen, right? And then Foligno coming in immediately dropping gloves. I think that was a good sight to see.
Yes. Wasn't scared.
No. He immediately was like, okay, let's go then.
And it was a good scrap. It wasn't like a little baby fight. That was a scrap.
No, those are two big boys going in there, so.
Yeah, I didn't think the hits were, I mean, obviously you don't want to see those against our players, but they were clean hits. Like
the second hit was close.
Well, Goudreau had his head down, and like it wasn't a dirty hit in my opinion at all.
No, but I'm saying it was close to an elbow to the head though. Like he aimed it up that way, and that's just who Revo is.
That's him.
We loved having him on our team last year
because he would do the dirty shit.
Yeah,
that's like, just who he is.
It's a hockey play there in my opinion, but like. Yeah, it's crazy how you go from buddies, best friends to enemies in a year. But like at the same, I bet Afa, like, you know, if let's take Hockey out for a second, I bet they're still friends. Like it's crazy how you can just, oh yeah, let's fucking go. Let's drop the gloves. Like,
yeah. So to that point, Kyle, there was an article that Russo wrote last night about the game. And Russo even talked about how Freddie Gaudreau, his kids, had talked about Ryan Reeves. And like, are you guys friends? He's like, yeah, we're still friends. Mm-hmm. Like, it's on the ice. You guys are enemies because that's what you're there for. That's why you're making $1 million a year and making a good bit of money per year. But off the ice, you separate that. It's just the same thing as separating personal life and work life. It's the same concept, except for these guys are obviously beating the shit out of each other. Right. So a little bit of a different situation there. But enough about Ryan Reeves and those hits. Thankfully, Freddie Gaudreau did come back. And obviously had a pretty solid game. Great job on the faceoff dot when Rossi got pulled out. But I know, Kyle, you want to talk about Rossi a little bit.
Yeah, what'd Rossi, man. He's looking real comfortable. I said it before, but yeah, put him on the first line right now. He deserves it. He's actually probably, he's playing like our best forward right now, in my opinion, even with Kirill in, like you notice him when he has the puck, when he's battling, like just give him a shot. I thought like his goal, I couldn't be more happy. First career NHL goal. Finally. Even though he did technically score last game, that was a beautiful goal, but
no offsides this time.
I'm glad he got it just seems like he exhaled. Like there's no monkey on his back anymore. Like it's just, now he's just sailing away here. But yeah, like that play it was a bad game, but like, let's just talk about the positives here. Like I thought Faber again was fantastic, +3, and we lose 7-4. But
Faber was great.
He's the one that made that goal, like on the Rossi's first goal. Like you see him driving into the zone. Like that's what you need. We don't have a high octane offense, like in my opinion. So, but what we do have is some really good mobile defensemen that can get up in the play, that can skate well, that can cover back. Like we have a really good. Well, obviously, this game wasn't our bottom two.
I was
going to
say, they just got to play defense.
Yeah, but Spurgeon, you put Spurgeon back in, and it's
a little bit of a different story.
It's a top, in my opinion, top five defense. But Faber, man, like, just a stud already. Just, he was fantastic again. Him and Brodin, I'll say it again, best defensive pair in Minnesota Wild history. So, a very impressive night from both of them, I thought, even though it was a 7-4 loss.
Talking about Faber real quick, one of his first shifts, he just absolutely looked like a monster. Went all the way down the boards, left-hand side, hit the blue line by the goal line there, and then just came back in a little greasy tuck and almost had a goal on his own. Mm-hmm. Just missed getting a little elevation on that. I even thought to myself when he was like doing the play when it happened at the replay, I'm like, dang, if he could have gotten that puck up on edge just a touch, he was like an inch below the top of the goalie's pad. That could have been a greasy single-handedly goal right there. You're talking about mobile defensemen. That's his one of the first shifts of the game for the kid. I was happy with that, 100%.
Well, and that play just shows you the sheer speed he actually possesses, you know.
Kids are easy.
So I think he's going to catch a lot of teams off guard that just don't really know who he is yet, and they won't. But I think...
They will.
If he's that, just... Yeah.
They
no,
will.
No
they
doubt.
Will now.
No doubt. And I think if he's bringing the puck into the zone, all of a sudden he can just flip a switch, turn on the Jets, and get around the corner. They're going to have to be ready for that.
It's going to be tough. Opponents need to be really prepared for that. I think that's, you know, talking about being prepared for that. Let's talk about next week's games, right, boys?
One more thing here.
Go ahead, Kyle. What do you got?
But yeah, Faber, I think Brodin's point totals this year will increase a lot. Like probably he'll probably have one of the best seasons statistically because of what Faber can bring. And they're both very similar players. I think Brock has a little bit more offensive skill, but sure. I love seeing those two jump in the play. Like I've been waiting for Brodin to get up there because I know how well he can skate, but this is just exciting to see.
The top two players in plus minus on the team right now, Brock Faber, Jonas Brodin.
Yeah, not surprising.
That's awesome.
It's good to see. As much as I love Dumba, I know that Brodin had to take a backseat a little bit because he had to kind of be there and be home in case Dumba made a goofy play.
Right.
And again, we talked about that last episode. I'm a diehard Dumba fan. Good for dude, though. Got a goal in game one of, the Coyote season. Love to see it.
Very happy
but
for him.
Talk about, I had to throw it in there.
You just had to sneak it in.
I did, boys. Hey, I'm sorry.
I'm happy for him, so that's awesome.
Me too. He's got a good environment down there in Arizona. Yeah. I know it's weird environment, but it's good for him. A little fresh start.
Yeah, well, talking about fresh starts, let's talk about next week's games, boys. We got three games in the slate coming up. First big game coming up this week at the Montreal Canadiens. Next, we've got home against the Kings and home against the Blue Jackets. Talking about back in the days of Bruce Boudreau, his theory was you want to win the week. We got three games coming up. I know, Kyle, you mentioned you'd like to see at least two wins out of that. Kyle, what are you looking forward this week?
Yeah, I want to see it. Well, three would be great, but the Kings are tough, but I think the Wild can come up with four out of the six. I at least want them to, but points.
Four out of the six. I was like, looking at the wrong week.
We both looked at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And I want Rossi on the first line. That's what I want to look for. And I'm really curious because he made an impression on Dean, and I hope it comes true. Like, because he deserves a shot, and why not? You know,
we'll have to see what happens coming up this week. Smelsey, what do you want to see from the boys in green this week?
I'm gonna go ahead and agree with Kyle. I think we get 4 out of the 6 points available with an L coming to the Kings. I think the Canadians, we should be able to beat them pretty handily. I think you gotta watch out for what's his name? Cole Caulfield.
Yeah, he's okay. You know, he's small. You can knock him off the puck.
Yeah, he's a young guy though. He's an up and comer. That's why I said look out for him. He's got a little bit of speed, so just keep an eye out. Other than that,
is that all they have at?
Really? I mean, truly.
I'm kind of spacing out on their roster for some reason.
That's about it, bro. They got Shane Monahan.
Sean Monahan.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sean Monahan and Cole Caulfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should...
Some guy named Alex Newhook. I don't know him very well.
Oh, he's from Colorado, yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
So he's there. He's solid.
We're talking about the Kings still?
No.
Montreal.
But yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
I don't even know defensively.
Nothing that scares me defensively. Nothing that again that really scares me that much.
They should win that game.
Their top line, defensive line looks pretty decent, but other than that, okay. I think we're okay.
It's very winnable.
Goalie wise, they got an aging Jake Allen, Jake Allen, right? That's his name. Aging Jake Allen. I'm not too concerned with Montreal. That should be a win. The Kings could be a little tougher, right? Yeah. Our former Wild player, Fiala, already off to a hot start. And like you alluded to earlier, they still have Anze Kopitar. I mean, I think...
Byfield.
If anything's going to be tough, it'll be the Kings.
Yeah, they got a solid squad.
I think their goaltending is the only sus spot right now. They have... Copley and Talbot back there. Obviously, we know Talbot pretty well, but he's streaky. He's streaky, and it can be a positive streak or a negative streak. So,
absolutely,
I'm not too concerned with that. But I don't know. The Kings are gonna be tough.
What do you think about Columbus, boys?
I think Columbus is a win. I think Columbus is struggling a little bit, but I think they're kind of in. I think they're not rebuilding, but close to it.
Kind of similar to us in a way of like not a full quote unquote admitted rebuild, but
right.
some progress being made, some moves being made. And so you guys think,
so that should be a win.
You guys think easy win against Canadiens.
Yep.
Easy win against Blue Jackets. Kings may be tough. We'll see how that pans out.
I think Montreal could be a tougher game than the Blue Jackets.
Really? Okay.
I think Montreal's trying to come out of the dumpster, but I think they're still there.
Sure.
But I think they're, I don't know. I
just get at least 4 out of 6. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the question I pose to you guys is, after seeing Gustafson with a shutout in the last game of the preseason, shutout game one of the season, and then just getting kind of slapped around pretty hard by Matthews and the Maple Leafs, going forward into the next few games, who do you start?
I think it's Fleury.
And then you start Fleury game one against Canadiens?
Next game for sure, I think it's Fleury. Okay. I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest.
Sure.
Give Gus a rest. I mean, 7 goals. I mean, none of those were his fault. Or maybe one or two.
Yeah.
The game certainly didn't fall on Gus, but it's going to be Fleury in that next game.
Okay.
In my opinion, just give Gus a little bit of a break for, and then start him the following game.
So yeah, I agree. I think Fleury gets a start against Montreal. I think if Fleury gives up 2 or less goals in Montreal, screw it. Go ahead, start him against a good team, against the Kings. See what he's going to look like. And then kind of make your decision for the third game from there. Sure. I think if Fleury starts the next two, then Gus definitely gets game three of the week.
Okay.
But I think if Fleury just does not look good against the Canadiens, let's say we still squeak out the win, but he just doesn't look good, I think Gus gets a start against the Kings.
Okay.
And probably the Blue Jackets. And you start seeing him take on that more number one role. I think Fleury's going to have a short leash this year, and he's definitely the number two option.
Yes, and he's for old. Us. Gus is your number one, hands down. He'll probably get, I'm going to guess it's going to be an 80-20 split.
Really?
This year.
Do you see?
Or 70-30. But yeah, very high on Gus being in that.
Do you see a contender that might need a backup goalie trading for a Fleury at all?
Well, we talked about that a little bit last episode, I think, right. Just a touch about he may not stick around for the Wild. And then, you know, also the side of things is like, if this is his last year in the league, you'd think he'd go somewhere he's got some, I guess, reputation or whatever, so he can possibly retire in a team where he spent a good bit of his time. Do you think maybe he does one of those moves, or does he just say screw it and goes where the money is?
I feel like if he would go anywhere, it would be Pittsburgh, to be honest, and have a last final run, but
a little hoorah.
But yeah, I don't really see, unless there, you know, there's injury. I mean, I think Guerin and Fleury are very tight. So
yeah,
I think Guerin would be like, hey, what do you think about this possibility?
Sure.
But if, you know, if he says no, I'm comfortable here, I don't see him moving.
No, anywhere. No, so. Yeah, and I was just saying, like, I don't know. I see him here, but if he does get traded, I don't see us. I think the only move then we would make is bring up Zane McIntyre for the rest of the year, which I don't think is a super amazing move for us, which is why I think maybe
McIntyre would be Wallstead.
We would not bring up Wallstead this year.
Yes, we would, 100%.
Why?
He's got like a 90% save. Zach, you're not going to start McIntyre. Are you nuts?
Yeah.
Are you
unless,
nuts? Right
unless
now?
Unless we're going for a cup.
I didn't
unless
even know he was on our roster. Or like a roster.
I think he's the second goalie. No, yours is Garrett
not,
or whatever.
No, he's not. We'll save that.
The
for
second
another
goalie
day,
on the Iowa Wild. I'm
no.
Saying.
Yeah, McIntyre is nowhere to be found.
I'm not saying he's good.
Well, no.
Where did I say he was good?
He's not going to be on the roster.
Where did I say he was good?
He's not going to be on the Minnesota Wild's roster.
He is right now.
No, it's going to be Wallstead. If yes, 100%. There's absolutely no way McIntyre gets the nod before Wallstead.
I think you leave Wallstead.
We'll save this for
I know,
another
I'm
time,
saying, I think you
that
leave
is
Wallstead.
Probably one of the dumbest takes I've heard today.
That's fine.
I love you and all, but that's man, fun. That McIntyre, oh my goodness, man.
That's fine, but why would you bring up Wallstead when you're not even competing for a cup? Why?
Because we talked about this last episode where you leave Wallstead
traded,
down there.
Yeah, Wallstead will be in easily.
I don't see us actually trading Fleury.
No, I don't.
But if we do, I don't think we bring up Wallstead. I think you leave him down there for the entire AHL season and let him get his more experience. He's 20 years old. He's not Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky came up because he was good at his age.
Right now, Wallstead is the best goalie prospect in the world. Right
sure,
now, in the
sure.
world. I don't care what his age is. Age is just a number. You're seeing 18-year-old. What's Connor Bedard? 18? He's the first line.
He's not a goalie.
Well,
he's not a goalie.
Goalies are different, I know, but Wallstead right now is the best
if
goalie
you look,
on the planet.
And I know this is just all numbers and stuff, but if you look at statistically, goalies don't hit their prime until they're 27, 28 years old. I just don't want to come too early with him.
He did just fine in preseason, though.
He did.
Well, look at the Wild's notorious feat of bringing up people before they're ready to go. Look at what the Rossi last season, Kalen Addison last season, they got brought up, made this whole big funk we talked about earlier, and they got sent back down because they weren't ready for it. So Tyler's point in the first episode is that you got to let these guys sit and kind of fester a little bit, and kind of develop a little bit
more. Garen likes to bake them like cookies. He likes to sit. He likes to, you know, wait. He likes to cook the prospects in the system for a while. But right now, Wallstead is all pretty much ready. He's pretty much ready.
There's no denying he's good. I'm not denying that by any means.
No, he's ready. He is ready.
Maybe if we're leading our division, a top team in the conference, okay, maybe you can bring him up then to pair with Gus.
Yeah, you would.
But I don't see him playing in the NHL this year for us unless something really crazy happens.
The only way he does get a shot is if Fleury is gone, which I don't see. So it would be next year anyway, and then he's up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. Only one way to find out, right? Hopefully we just don't have that bad of a season.
And to be honest, right now, I think Wallstead's better than Fleury. If not better than Gustafson, honestly.
That take, yes.
Honestly, he could be better than Gustafson.
Wallstead is better than Fleury.
But that's too much pressure for a 20-year-old, so that's why he's not on the roster. But he right now, I think Wallstead could be better than Gus.
Both
goalies on the roster right now, he's probably better than both of them. The reason why he's not on the roster is because he's 20, and we have two vets right now. Or not vets. I don't know how old Gus is, but Fleury... You're not going to send Fleury down. You're not going to send Gus down. They've been here last year. So they were here last year. So, yeah, the only way this happens is if Fleury gets traded and then you have that talk. So.
Yeah, and I'm not seeing, you know, Wallstead. I'm not saying Wallstead won't be up here until the Parise or Suter contracts are over.
No. He'll be here next year.
But, it could be a small factor, right? Like, I agree with you. He'll be up here next year because Fleury's contract's done. Who else are you going to bring up? That's your time to bring up Wallstead at that point. And then, who knows who's going to be the number one tendy. They're going to have to battle it out, and it's going to be a Dean call. And my gut tells me Dean will go with Gus because of his veteran, you know, unless that's where BG gets in his ear, like, nope, it's the Jesper show now. But that's a next season thing. I agree with you there.
Even last year, it was kind of, it was more the Gus show. But it wasn't like Gus was starting every game. It was like Fleury this, you know, it was a toss up between the two.
Which hurt us.
You,
ultimately, it hurt us because nobody could take that number one spot and be, I don't know. I think that hurt us ultimately, like splitting it as much as they did.
Yep. But for playoff, you roll with the hot goalie. You roll with the hot goalie.
Yeah, no, that's all I got about the matter, Kev. What you got over there?
There's a lot going on over here. Those are some hot takes for sure. But with that, boys, I think this is a fantastic episode. Kyle, it was incredible to have you back, dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Smelty, as always, love to have you back, buddy. Good to see you. With that, boys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Ringside Chirps on Banner with the Boys. We'll be back next week talking about the three games we just kind of mentioned before. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Keep listening on.
Yeah, please, if you guys got something to say, throw it in the comment section. I want to see feedback. I like to answer. I'd like to share the comments on here. It'd be really fun.
Yeah, I'd also like to share the comments. Go ahead and you can message us on Facebook too. Follow our page on Facebook. That'd probably be the easiest way to leave a comment, or on our YouTube page would be easy as well. We'd love to bring some of those comments in here, especially if it's going to get Kyle and I heated or something. Bring it in. Let's debate it.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thanks again for your time this week. We'll catch you in the next one.
Don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe. Tune in next time for more Banter with the Boys.